funny. Everybody saw him. He was Cedar, my husband, these guys. Thank goodness. Anyways, while we're, I forgot to tell you guys, I'm passing the basket for the seventh tradition going around on both sides of the tables. Which states that we're fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And now it is my honor, if I can do this without crying. So I want to introduce our speaker tonight. She's a real good friend. We met in Florida. She has 41 years of sobriety. She was born in Butler, Georgia. I thought that was interesting. Right? She sobered up in Fitzgerald, Georgia. And Mark and I met her in service work. We were in District 5 in Florida, which is kind of ironic because this is District 5. We love this couple. They're crazy friends. Wendell and Sandy now live in Reidsville, North Carolina. They took a 9-hour ride yesterday in a whole bunch of holiday traffic to get here. And we'd like to give them a warm welcome and let Sandy tell her story.
Got me out of jail. Not even go home to take a shower. I would have straight to the bar to see if I was missed. You know what? And I was. You know, I mean, they had heard of my dilemma. And this is back, you know, I got busted before getting busted was fashionable, and you done some serious time. So that day we went to the bar after I got out of jail. I drank free the whole night. I mean, they were giving me my send-off party because they knew I was going to prison too. So I'm at the house, and I'm going to prison, I know that, and there's a knock on the door. Now, the guy that's knocking on the door, he and I used to party hard together. I mean, we would drink and have the best time. And he had been somewhere, and then he come back and he was talking in half sentences. And they didn't make no sense. You know, we'd say, come go have a beer with us. He said, oh, I'm not drinking one day at a time. I said, okay, we'll see you at a bar. And we'll go to the bar. You know, he would, you know, someone had me at work, and he said, oh, just let go and let God. Let go and let God do what? You know, he wasn't drinking one day at a time. He wasn't any more fun. He was talking in half sentences. It didn't make no sense to me or anybody else I was hanging with. You know, and I just couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. And here he is at my house. Now, I'd been sipping that morning. And in my mind, if I was drinking liquor, I was drinking. But if I was drinking beer, I was just sipping. And it didn't count. And so I'd been sipping that morning when he come here. So I opened up the door, you know, I can call anything when there's a buzz going. And he started talking to me, and he told me, he said, I know how you can get your job back. I said, shoot, sign me up, right? Well, he did, but he signed me up for treatment. Now, I had never heard of treatment. I didn't know nothing about it. I didn't know the guy that was talking in half sentences and bigger treatment, but he told me that he had. I'm going, no wonder you're crazy, you know, he wasn't any fun anymore. So he started talking to me about that's the way I can get my job back. I said, okay, you know, sign me up. Well, the next thing you know, I got two old men that I work with. I mean, old men, knocking on my door. And I'm, you know, I can't say what I thought they wanted, but what I know today is they wanted 12-step. Back then, I wasn't sure. So what they did is they come in the house and sat down and told me all the kind of stuff they did while they were drinking. And I could not believe they were actually saying that stuff out loud. I mean, that's the stuff that you didn't tell nobody. That's the stuff that stayed behind closed doors. That's the stuff that you know, wished and prayed that you would forget. You know, and for sure nobody saw you doing it. But that's the kind of conversations they were having with me that day. And I thought they were just being dirty on me. Trying to press this young hot thing, right? No. They were putting a stick in me. And what happened next is that one of the dirty old men, he was an NAA, and his wife, she was an Al-Anon, they come to take me to treatment. Now, I didn't know you could go to treatment all tore up. They didn't tell me that. They didn't tell me I could go to treatment sipping or drinking or nothing, smoking nothing. So here I am. I got makeup on. I got my blue jeans pressed. I got my hoodie with a sack bag. I mean, I didn't have a suitcase. So here I go to treatment. You know, I'm sitting on the stoop like a little girl gonna catch a school bus or something. So I'm in the back seat. The Al-Anon's in front, and they ain't driving. And I'm gonna tell you that Al-Anon got to talking, and I'm gonna tell you what she scared me to death. She was talking about how wonderful life was, not ever drinking again. Can you imagine? I could not imagine. I, you know, and the more she talked, the more excited she got about not drinking and what a good sober life they were having and blah, 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 blah. I'm going, it scared me to death. Because I tell you, I had been sober a couple of times, and I didn't like it either time. I didn't stay sober for long periods of time because I didn't like the way I felt sober. You know, I always, you know, I was restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, I hated who I was, and sometimes if I wasn't drinking, I hated who you were. And, you know, I was never okay inside of me. I was always looking for something out there, you know, to grab, to do, to buy, anything to make me feel different in here. And she was talking about not ever drinking again. I'm going to tell you, I was shaking like a leaf when we pulled up at that treatment center, scared to death. I know I made a mistake. But maybe this will look good in front of the judge and I won't go to prison and I can get on with the rest of my life. I had no intention of doing anything other than just not trying to keep from going to prison. That was my main objective. Sober was not in my, you know, it wasn't in it at all. So we get in that treatment center. This Alamo lady got a hold of me. She didn't let me go either. And because I'm scared. And apparently they've had experience where people had got to the treatment center and took off running. They didn't go in the door, they went back home. So the A man, he's gone, signed papers or whatever he's doing, and this Alamo woman's got a hold of me. And she carried me through some double doors. You know, and it looked like we went down a long hall, kind of like that door right there. But there were double doors, and you know, they had the glass, you know, the little glass square thing in it. And then she kind of put her hand in the middle of my back, kind of shoved me through, and closed the door. I'm turning around, I'm looking, because I thought she was coming with me. She wasn't. I flash my face up against that window, and I start crying, and I don't cry pretty. I blow snot, my makeup runs, and my cheeks get all puffy and red. I'm not one of these little petite criers, you know, a little skewed. I get ugly in the face. And I got that face flashed up against that window, and I'm hoping she'll turn around and come back and open this door, because I know I've made a mistake. I'm just going to go to prison and to heck with the rest of it, right? You know that heifer kept right on going. She had me turn around and walk back. I hate down on her because they were so mean. The staff come got me, and they took one of the girls, took me to the room. She's got to fill out a paperwork, right? Well, I'm in trouble, I'm not stupid. So she starts asking me all these questions, and I'm not going to confess to nothing else. Some of you know they got me with enough, right? I'm not going to add those charges, you know? And so, so I'm trying to get her to fill out her paperwork and, you know, try to keep me from going to deeper in jail or longer in jail or whatever they were going to do to me. Because I didn't know. And that lady said, Sandy, she said, you know, you don't ever have to feel the way you feel inside ever unless you choose to. You know, when I thought about that, now, I'm one of four kids. My mom raised all of us by herself. We live with my grandmother. And, you know, I come out of shoe tall. I wasn't no little big baby or nothing. I come out tall with feet, and that's it. Legs and feet, that's what I was. You know, and I'm okay. I always got kicked back about being tall. I was always on the last one in the picture line in school, and I hated that. The boys kicked at me, and I wasn't those cute blondes that got, you know, with a little, I don't know. I was just lanky, and it. I hated growing up, and I just knew that, you know, if I was somewhere else in somebody else's house, I would be okay. And you know, I thought about that when that lady left that room. I remember laying on the bed, looking at a full moon, wishing I was anywhere else except where I was. And you know what? I hadn't had my first drink yet. Now, that feeling intensified when I started drinking. You know, I just remember, you know, anything but this, anything but this, anything but this. You know, and she told me I never had to feel that way again. All I had to do was do what they asked me to do. So I proceeded to try to do that to the best of my ability. Now, I'm not going to sit up here and tell you I've followed all the rules, none of that. But I followed most of them. And, you know, and I got the results of following most of them. Well, after I got out of treatment, they wanted to send me to a halfway house, which was fine. Except they wanted to send me to one with women in it. Now, I don't know what you do with the women. You know, they are the enemy, you know, with the big E. You know, I don't know what you do with women. I got the three brothers I just told y'all about. On one side of me was a pack of five brothers, on the other side was seven. Now, there wasn't women in the thing. I grew up with women. I grew up with them boys. And I'm going to tell you, you can't chase me nowhere with a bug. Well, used to you couldn't. Today, it's a little bit different. And, you know, I can bait my own hook. I can cut my own fish. I can clean my own squirrel. I don't know how to do all that. You know, I can, you know. And I can make a Coca-Cola can dance with a pistol. And, you know, so I don't know what you do with no women, you know, and so here I am in a house full of women, and they have rules in this house. They want you to wear clothes, all of them. I don't even know some of the stuff they want me to wear at this point, you know, because I don't know about your drinking, but sometimes when I would get drunk and, you know, get tangled up in some of that stuff, trying to get it back on me, I just said, hey, good, and I jumped it out the window. And I just went, fire, I quit wearing it. It was just too much trouble. But now I got to get it, you know. And I don't ever want to forget. here. When I look, when I'm anywhere, you know, and I look, I'm dressed nice, you know, and I'm in my right mind for the most part. You know, I don't ever want to forget that those women, you know, when I didn't know, what they did is they shut me in the dressing room and brought underwear across that store so it helped me figure out what size I was and, you know, and how to wear it and all that kind of junk. You know, and anytime I say, hey, I don't know, will you help me? In Alcoholics Anonymous, number one, it's ego deflation at death for me, at death, at death. But I always get the results, and y'all always help, and you don't laugh at me because I don't know. Now, day after tomorrow, we're laughing like crazy because there's somebody else out there, all their clothes, you know, going through the experience I just went through. You know, and I can share my experience with her. And I learned in the halfway house of those women that women wasn't the trouble. What I learned in the halfway house of those women is I thought all women were doing what I was doing. And if they were, they wasn't to be trusted. I had no morals. I had no values. Nothing was sacred. I did what I wanted to do to get me to that next drink. And slowly but surely, you know, all the pieces of my soul just went across the bar. And that's what happened. Soul, identity, all of it. And I don't ever want to forget that. You know, that's what I do, trying to drink and run my own life. And she tells me I never have to feel like that again, ever. You know, so I get to come home from the halfway house. They finally let me come out. You know, when I come out of that halfway house, I was looking. I had been away from the people that I was hanging with long enough that I could hold my head just a little bit high. I could look people in the eye, just not for long, but just a little bit. I wasn't looking at your shoes anymore. You know, I was able, because I was doing something different. You know, I was taking different actions. I was doing what they said. None of it made sense. Go to a meeting, how's that going to make me not want to drink? That don't even make sense. You know, I had an old guy tell me one time, he said, these old guys in AA, I swear. He told me, he said, well, honey, he said, to become a parent, you're going to have to do more than just sit in a PTA meeting. And I looked at him and I'm going, what? That doesn't even make sense. I'm not talking about PTA. You know, because I was wanting to, you know, I would go in the meeting, God would say, well, what if the promise is coming true for me, you know? And we all know, you know, you got to do the work before the promise is right. But he didn't tell me that. He'd come up with some stupid riddle or rhyme that didn't make no sense. That's the way I learned in that. So finally I get to come home. And in that halfway house, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And that, I go home to the meetings, and that's what I announce myself in the meetings. I do what they tell me to do. So I go in there, and we're big meeting in this little small town where I got sober. There was probably about seven people, the regulars, right? My name's Sammy, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And this old fart in the back of the room, he said, yeah, I got you going too. What's that got to do with it? Feel it. I mean, I backhanded around that place like I was fixing a terror before. Every time I mention I'm an alcoholic and addict, they scream about having cameras. What's that got to do with it anyway? And I'm going, what? He said, that's right, don't you forget it. These people are crazy. You know, and they had told me about him because he was, that man knew Alcoholics Anonymous. He knew about alcoholism. He knew about it in the people, and he did not care about my little feelings. You know, he didn't pull me off on the side, talk to me in private, none of that. He would scream in front of God and everybody. Finally, I asked somebody, why did y'all speak on me like that? And those guys said, you know, and when I got sober, if he didn't ask, they wasn't going to tell you nothing. They just going to watch you squirm. Jack him around the table all mad, you know, hoping you come back, didn't get drunk behind it all. So I finally asked somebody, why is y'all speaking to me like that? And this guy said, Sandy, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and we would love to have you here. But if you say you're anything other than an alcoholic, you're saying that you're different from us. Now, if you're different from us, what we're doing here might not work for you. You know, but we want to get you to the place where you can get the best help. So read your story and see if you can identify how he felt, the progression of his drinking, and just see if you can, not that he was a a stockbroker, none of that. Reed identified with his feelings. Now, Bill done drugs, just saying. If you've never read the story, he done drugs. They called him sedatives back then. I called them quaaludes. But what I can identify with Bill was, you know, once he started drinking, his friends started mentioning his drinking, and he would leave them alone. He wasn't hanging with them no more. I did that. You say something about my drinking, honey, you were on my list. You know, I look for people that drink like I did. He moved a lot. I moved a lot. You know, because it was always them. If I would stay away from them, I would be all right. I was always hanging with the wrong crowd. You know, if I could just pick the right people, I would be fine. So I could identify with that. I could identify with him wanting to kill himself and didn't have the guts. How many times have I prayed to God at night just letting me wake up dead? You know, I didn't want to kill myself. I was a chicken, you know, but I sure didn't want to live anymore the way I was living. So I could identify with Bill about that. And he talked about his depression, the lonely morass of self-pity or something like that. How many hours have I spent for me? Oh, if they just understood. Oh, if my mama hadn't done that. Oh, if he hadn't done that, you know, pour me a drink. How many times have I done that? So I could identify with Bill, you know, and he just talked about the progression of his drinking. You know, Bill was a smart, smart man. You know, we read in our history, in some of our literature books, they talk about he was a brilliant man, but he could just not drink. I remember, more than one time, going to a bar, I'm just going to have one and I'm going to go home. Just going to have one so I can just relax. Just got off work. Bad day at work. I'm just going to have one. And, you know, lo and behold, I wind up in another state with people I don't even know. And I don't know how long I've been there. How I got there, don't know that. I mean, not sure about their names either. You know, so I mean, I could not predict my behavior once I started drinking. The doctor's meeting talks about that. That once I start drinking, I cannot control where I go, what I do, and the amount I take. And the thing about it is, I'm always sober when I take that first one again. So I got this thing in my head, this obsession of my mind, that makes a drink a solution for whatever. Whatever dilemma I have going on. Good day, bad day, hot day, cold day, any day, I would drink it, just breathe. And I could identify with Ben. He went to treatment. He went to treatment a bunch of times. I just got out of treatment. You know, I mean, I could identify with Bill. So I go back to the meeting. My name's Hank, and I'm an alcoholic. And I listen. And you know what? That old fart didn't scream back in hemorrhoids no more. I didn't know I had the power to cure him, but obviously I do. You know, what's in my heart lately is my home group and how important it is to become that I became a member of that group. You know, there was one meeting one night a week in this little small town where I live. We got in the car every night. I thought step one was getting a car. You know, I didn't know. They would call me and say, "Thank you, we're going to pick you up at 7. You know, be ready." And I want to know where we're going because I want to know how to dress because this meeting over here and keep boys in. This one over here just had them old farts, right? You know, it doesn't matter. So, but I want to know where we were going. It don't matter, just get in the car, click, and then hang on. And they did not meet 7:05. They meet 7:00, not 7:01, because they would leave me, they would drive off and leave me right behind them. They would not stop. They taught me about respect of somebody's time. I didn't know, I thought they were just being mean and ugly and all that, but what it come down to was I was disrespectful of their time. They were going out of their way to come by and pick me up, and if I don't have enough, whatever, dignity and grace to at least be ready, you know, I'm not all of that in a box of rocks. So we go to a meeting every night of the week. We have a meeting going, we have a meeting there, and then we have a meeting coming home. And when we got home, we would put them a pot of coffee. Decaf ain't been invented yet. And we would sit at the kitchen table, drink that pot of coffee, and just float off because we'd be so spiritual. You know, because I could ask the questions on the way home about what I didn't understand in the meeting that they were talking about. And I was just so grateful that we did that one day at a time. You know, sometimes we would drive 45 minutes, sometimes we would drive an hour and 25 minutes. I mean, we went to a meeting every night of the week. And I am so grateful that they took time to do that. And that's what we did. We supported other groups. They had a birthday, we all let them go to that. You know, just simple things. You know, they taught me to show up early to start the coffee. Coffee should be ready by the time the meeting starts. Actually, the way they taught me, the coffee should be ready 30 minutes before the meeting starts so people can have the meeting before the meeting. Now, I thought the meeting started at 8, but it's 7:30 apparently. So, you know, those kind of things. They taught me about washing the ashtrays and, you know, and just picking up and just becoming a part of something. You know, and that's how I become a part of that group. I remember, I got some new clothes on. I'm still smoking cigarettes, so right there. I'm looking cute in the meeting. Got on my new little outfit and got the cigarettes right here. I'm just looking cute. And the basket goes by. Well, I'm too cute to put money in, I just pass it. But I got a brand new pack of cigarettes right here. The old guy that I cured, he got up out of his chair, walked all the way across the meeting, picked up my pack of cigarettes, and popped me on the nose with it. He said, if you can afford these, you can afford that. What is the price of your life anyway? And I'm calling him everything except white man. He taught me how to pray. I prayed every night he would die. I hated him. I hated him. But he's always been on me like that. But what I understand is that is tradition. Our tradition of self-support. But, you know, he didn't pull me aside and give me that lesson. Oh, no, he's up there in front of God and everybody. So I'm in his face. You know, I'd be whining about something terrible going on in my life. And he'd hear me up in the kitchen and pull a $5 bill out of his wallet. He said, here, Missy, it's so terrible here. Let me buy your first drink. And I'm appalled. He's trying to get an alcoholic to drink. They ought to shoot him, right? I mean, isn't that against some kind of AA rule? He's killing people. I didn't take that money. I went and shut up and said, hey, that's what I did. And, just that kind of stuff. And he told me, I'm sharing everything I learned in treatment in the meetings. And he said, you know what? He said, when you learn how to live sober, we'll listen to you talk until then shut up. I couldn't believe it. I ain't been to treatment. I know stuff. I ain't been educated about alcoholism. I was trying to pontificate all night. All my mask on. He's sober, I don't know, 10 or 12 years. I'm 6 months right now. And I know it. Oh, Lord. I don't know how they put up with me. One time I have offered him some of this. He looked at me and shook his head. I was mad at that point. And he said, Sandy, he said, I don't want in your pants. He said, honey, I want you sober. I want you sober. That's the kind of love that man had for me. For any woman alcoholic coming into the rooms. You know, he showed us respect. They would get bad about people talking trash to a woman in a meeting. They didn't tolerate that a bit. They would take them out in the parking lot and have a discussion. You know, but that's what I come into. I gotta tell you the rest of this story. This Al-Anon, I asked her, why is the treatment? There wasn't any women coming to stay in this meeting. So I asked her if she would sponsor me, and she said she would. And so, Al-Anon and the fashionistas, she taught me what women did in the daytime. But what I come to find out is she told all those little boys hanging around the meeting that I had an STD. Unbeknownst to me. I would go up there to the boys and be winking and blinking, and they even thought I saw water, hot water, and they took off running. I couldn't figure out what in the world was wrong with them. And finally, this lady told me what she did, and I was mortified. I couldn't believe it. But you know what? Protecting me from myself, right? Because I would have had my phone with those guys, but she put a She could have stopped. You know, I'm not willing to go immediately to have a girl get sober. You know, she loved me that much. You know, one day, I don't know if y'all ever been on the AA date, but I'm going to tell you my experience, and I'm going to tell you I didn't see the point. I started weeping and bleeding. We go into meetings every night, right? Always Carlo, the guys, and me. And I start weeping and bleeding at the youngest one, because we were a bunch of old guys when I got sober. So the youngest one, I start weeping and bleeding at. So he asked me on a date. So we had to go to dinner before the meeting, because the meeting was 8 o'clock and everything was closed before that in this little town. Then we go to the meeting, and then he would take me home and he would leave. I didn't see the point in the way they date. I mean, I wanted them to come on in the house and let's get spiritual. And I offered him some of this and he turned me down too. So I'm just, apparently he caught that out of my But I am angry about that. Now, we've been winning and winning a couple of meetings and stuff, but it was serious. I mean, you know, I saw things in my future. She's in the garden digging potatoes, and I am mad. So I'm swinging dirt, and I'm cussing. And I'm asking her, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with me? How come you don't want some of this? You know, I offered him some. And she said, well, honey, maybe he's trying to show you some respect. I'm going, respect? You know, like, duh. You know, what is that? I want the respect where they've been with you that night, and they call you the next day. That's not respect. I'm looking at it. You know, if you're not sponsoring women, you're missing some cheap entertainment. I did not know how that woman kept a straight face in that garden that day, but she was talking to me about respect. You know what she did? Oh, Lord. Well, finally, me and this guy, when I'm winking and blinking at, we finally get born an AA date, more than one, and he asked me to marry him. And I said, okay, you know. He didn't taste the milk of the cow and the crap. We're spiritual. So we get married, you know, and because we had been to all the meetings around and attended all those groups and everything, everybody came. Kind of like tonight. You know, everybody came to support an event that's put on by people that you just know and love and you see and that they're involved, you know, and all of that. You know, and they were there. Now, my oldest brother found me in New Orleans, Louisiana, selling myself on the streets. That's where my alcoholism took me. And he disowned me on the spot. He picked me up by the collar and just dropped me like a sack of potatoes and disowned me on the spot. And because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and in the process that we go through, I was able to make amends to that man. You know, because I am sure that that is not what he wanted for his only sister. That's not the life he wanted. You know, and I'm sure he was very embarrassed on my behavior through the years because of my drinking and just showing out like I did. You know, but because of the amends process and the inventory process, I looked at the part where I was to blame and where I was wrong. My book does not say, look at my part. It says, look where I was wrong and where I'm to blame. And I did that, and I made amends to him, and he won't be there. Now, if I had never did anything outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, that would have been enough. I would have been overpaid if I just got that. But that's just the start. You know, as we get in here and get busy with these steps, no matter what kind of mess I have made in my life, and I heard a speaker say one time, he said, it don't matter how dark it is, you know, in the woods, you know, the messes that we create, the havoc that I wreak in other people's lives, we are only 12 steps out of those dark woods. And my experience has been that it's the truth for me and my family. You know, I remember going to my mama, one time after I got drunk and got beat up, I mean, it looked like I'd been pulled behind a truck, and I'm there knocking on her door. Hey, Mom! Now, she ain't talked to me in months, and I go to her door looking like that. How does a person make amends for that? How in the world can you make amends for that? You know, I'll tell you how I made amends for that. when I made amends to her, she said, honey, all I ever wanted for you to be happy. So every Wednesday, I started calling her every week, and every Wednesday she heard me happy. I started writing checks for the money that I had stolen from her. The things that, I mean, she financed cars, she bought cars for me. I thought, oh yeah, Mom, I'll make those payments. Never made the first one. You know, I started sending her what I could every month with a little note. You know, just want to let you know what I'm doing, still sober. Here, you know, paying on that money. I didn't know how much I owed. It didn't matter. You know, I just, it was on time every month. You know, y'all taught me that. Y'all taught me it didn't matter what the amount that was there, just the consistency. You know, I wanted to go up there and pop a big old chunk of change down on the table and say, here you go, and sashay off. That's me and my ego. But ego deflation is death is at $25 a month. Every month, we're rolling up. Hey, I love you, Mom. Still sober and talking to her every week. You know, y'all taught me how to be a kind, loving daughter. Y'all taught me what kind, loving daughters did. You know, and the actions they took, and that's what we did. I did with her. You know, and I am just so blessed that when it came time in her life, she was able to come to Idaho and live with me and my husband, and I got to show her what a kind, loving daughter looked like. You know, she got to meet y'all. I mean, some of the best times the girls that I sponsored had was when I was at work. They dropped by to see her, and she would tell them about my escapades. And she didn't spare none of them. I cleaned stuff up. Kind of talked to them, but she didn't. You know, and they loved her, and she loved them. You know, y'all just brought her into your life too. You know, and if I just got that, I would have been okay. You know, just that, just having my mom and us being able to sit in the same room. You know, when she died, we were able to unplug her without Mama. I wish I'd said, Mama, I wish I'd have done. All of that had been said and done because y'all showed me how to do that. The steps, my sponsor. I'm about 10 years sober, and I want a woman sponsor. So, you know, I start asking the women in my little neck of the woods to sponsor me. They go, oh no, we ain't having nothing to do with you. You know, because that man I married, I had an affair at 5 years sober. And that news got back to the group before I did. And the group took sides and it wasn't mine. And they called me a whore in the meeting. I'm going to tell you, I went up to the podium and told them what they could do with their mom and their brother and their sister and all that other kind of stuff. And I sashayed out. I told them I didn't need them anymore. And that's the biggest lie I've ever told them. Because I know that I need Alcoholics Anonymous more today than I did when I first got sober. Because I got a lot more to lose. You know, I needed more than ever. So what happened for me is I started going to different meetings, and 5 years sober, I'm wanting to kill myself. I'm sitting on the bed with a gun, and I have a moment of clarity. You know, I know way down deep where I live, I'm an alcoholic, and I cannot drink. But I know that I can't go to AA anymore either, you know, because everybody's taking sides, and it ain't mine. I'm not saying what I did was right. But I'm just saying, sometimes we just got to remember this is Alcoholics Anonymous and put principles above personalities. And we make mistakes. I have made many mistakes in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank the good Lord, I did not take the drunk behind any of them. But I tell you what, this one I wanted to blow my brains out. And you know, when I that moment of clarity, I thought about that old guy, the one I cured.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen him in a while. You know, if you give me 5 minutes, I'll tell you what an SOB he was and how bad he was treating newcomers and all that kind of stuff. We started a different meeting without him. Small town, he could have found it, but he didn't bother. And I know his phone number. Because back then, we didn't have cell phones. We dialed the number. And every time we talked, I mean, there were long distance charges. You know, and he didn't want no call after 9 o'clock. That's when you could call for free. He didn't want them in. He wanted them when they got the charges. He told me, he said, if this phone call ever gets more expensive than a six-pack of beer, you let me know. And I checked the bill and I checked the price of beer, you know, to figure out. I'm going to let him know. But today what I know is that phone call was always less expensive than me drinking that six-pack. I didn't know that then, but I know that today. Because drinking that six-pack of beer will take my life. I had no doubt. So I call this old guy, and I'm blowing snot like I did with that Al-Anon lady and treatment and all that. And I'm, he said, "Who is this?" And I said, I told him. Had to tell him two or three times that I'm blowing snot and sniffing so bad. And he said, "Can you drive?" I said, he said, "Get in the car." "Crap, I'm back on step one. Get in the car, right?" So I get in the car, and I drive over to his house, and you know what? He was on his front stoop with an arm dog. Just open. You know, and I go and I just fall down. And he didn't say, "Sandy, what did you say this about me? Why did you talk bad about me?" None of that. He just invited me in his house. And him and his wife were taken to the Southeast, and they put me in their hip pocket. And I got to go to conventions and hear speakers talk about life, sober life, real life, because they shared what happened with them in sobriety. And they made mistakes, but didn't have to get drunk. And they cleaned up the wreckage of their past, you know, like we're taught to do through our steps, right? And I know a guy from California, of course, you know, but he was sitting in a meeting with three ex-wives, and none of them liked. I promise you, I thought of him. And he explained to me about principles before personalities. He said, "This is the only place that I gotta go. I gotta assume that's the only place they gotta go. And am I gonna take the responsibility for them not being able to come through that door? I don't think so. This is life and death. Sometimes we think this is just our Saturday meeting or whatever. This is life or death for me. And I need to remember that, keep that principle first and foremost in my mind." You know, and so I started praying, "God, I want to make amends, right?" And I'm at the district meeting, of course. I was involved in service at above the group level. And in come ex-husband, and I'm going, "Oh, God, not today." You know, I wanted to, not in front of everybody, you know. But I got up out of my seat, and I walked across that room, and I shook my hand out, and I said, "I'm glad you're here." And I did not say I was glad to see him there, because I wasn't. But I was glad he was there. And you know what? When I sat back down, I was free. I didn't know amends happened that fast. You know, I didn't know every time you turned a page. I didn't know every time you talked to somebody. I didn't know every time you took it. I was not obsessed with him being in that room. That immediate relief from making those amends, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. So, Lord, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a lot. I got married again in AA, sober, whatever. I thought lack of children was my dilemma, you know, and I found me a man that had a couple, and I don't know how I did what I did, but it wasn't on his business or my business, and we're married. I think they call that obsession of the mind. Well, Rob, going back 2 years, and I've come to find out, like, children is not my dilemma, you know, but I didn't have to swing out on another man, you know, so I've grown spiritually. But, you know, as a result of that, you know, I'm about 10 years sober this time, and I want a woman sponsor, and I start asking women, and they go, "Oh, girl, no, no." You know, I pray, and I go to meet somebody, give me a number, and I dial. No, we're not, no. I don't sponsor women. Saying who was from where? No. Talk to you later, please, you know. So I start praying. You know, when all that fails, I pray. I don't know about y'all. And I pray, and I get it. There's a tape that comes in the mail, and this lady said on that tape that she knew she had to get either in AA or get out. You know, and I'm about 10 years sober, and I know I had to get in AA or get out. So I called her. It took us a couple of days to catch up. And I asked her if she'd sponsor me. I was interviewing her, right? And she said, "Well, I've got some questions." I said, "Okay." She said, "How many meetings are you going to a week?" I said, "Well, one. I can't tell them that I'm, you know, about me sashaying in the meetings and, you know, telling everybody off." Finally found a meeting I could go to where they wasn't going. She said, "Oh, honey, that's some change." She said, "I want you to wear a dress to the meeting." I said, "A dress? What are you talking about, a dress?" She said, "Honey, it ain't for you. It's about being an example for the newcomers. You know, if you don't look no better than they do, what have they got to aspire to? It's never been about me. It's been about the example I set of Alcoholics Anonymous." And I understand I did not have on a dress tonight. I struggle with that. But I gained some weight. My dresses don't fit. So there you go. That's my rationalization. So, you know, but she taught me more about being a woman of principle. She said, greet everybody in the room. Work the room. She said, that way you don't know who's gossiping about who, or those little cliques you're not involved in, and you'll know for sure who the newcomers are. Because this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and they are the lifeblood of AA. And we need to treat them with dignity and respect when they get here. Show them where the bathroom is, get them a cup of coffee, have them sit by you, whatever. So that was some of the stuff she started teaching me how to do. Being principled in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, oh my gosh, you know, I'd want to call her and gossip about people. She said, well, honey, do you think that maybe they just don't know? I said, well, how can they not know? They're doing this and this and this. She said, as I recall, the last good idea you had was whatever his name was of the day. And I said, oh. She remembers what I got. I don't like that part. You know, but I've become willing to do what that woman asked me to do because I wanted different results. And I see light in her eyes and happiness in her heart. And she is free of all of the gunk of her past. And I wanted to be like that. So I started doing what she asked me to do, and I'm free of all that. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has taken me to different states. You know, and AA is there. The principles of this program are the same. You know, I need to be a greeter at the door. I don't need to be taking people's inventories. I need to be working the room and speaking to everybody. I need to try to be an example. I need to get a commitment. So I've got a reason to go to the meeting every week, even if I'm tired, even if I don't feel like it, whatever. You know, and because I do that, I get excited about going to the meetings. You know, I get excited to find out if she's still coming. You know, this is day 21 for our birth. You know, I get excited about seeing him because him and his wife were fighting last week, and I hope he didn't get drunk. You know, I get excited about, you know, caring about others. You know, just letting them know if you don't drink, it's going to get better. You're going to get better, and you're going to get through this. And you're going to be able to help somebody else just because you did. You know, that's a message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as a result of that, you know, we get to move to Florida. And I mean, Martin and Joyce in district. You know, Joyce had never been a secretary of district. And, you know, she screwed it up bad, and we loved her through it. And, you know, she never done it before. You know, and Mark with our DCM, and, you know, he pulled our district together, and he was just a powerful example. You know, and we got to, you know, people serious about AA wind up at district meetings. I didn't know that. You know, they're committed to service and to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to make sure that the message of alcoholics that our groups are informed. You know, it's a thankless task. You know, a lot of times you get a lot of crap because of it, but it's a powerful service that they do. And I am forever grateful that y'all do that. I mean, look what the District 5 did tonight. I mean, you know, that was big. I know, right? Yeah. Yesterday, there was people here early today, and there'll be people here tomorrow. Cleaning up, you know, making sure everything's put back better than they found it, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous teaches us to do. And, you know, and if you don't have anything to do tomorrow, come by. I'm sure we can all use an extra set of hands. I want to thank you so much for sitting and listening. I just really appreciate the invite, and the food was awesome. Thank you.
Speaking of District 5, we have this really creative, talented woman in District 5, and she has made you a special thank you gift. Carrie.